Welcome in time for the first Daily Editorial of this particular week. I want to say that I really was educated this weekend. I spent basically the entire weekend, with the exception of the Seattle Seahawks football game, which I watched at a different location. I spent the entire weekend going over all of your comments. I thought about every single one, and I came to a couple of conclusions. One of the conclusions I have is I think it's very important for all of us to be able to substantiate what we are saying, because we have an awful lot of misconceptions in what we are saying, but we have a very, very powerful website here. That's one thing I realized. Now, I want to get one thing straight, and I don't want to argue about it, because you guys don't know what I'm thinking. I am not a closet neocon. Ever since I was a kid and I heard Eisenhower's speech, you know, just around when he left office, about the negativity of the concept of neocons, I feel exactly the same way, 100%. And I don't support any of the actions that we as a country have taken that would give substantially nothing more than profit to the military suppliers, etc., etc. Want to touch on the fact that the subject of Ukraine being a nuclear power came up. It's not a nuclear power anymore. It was the third largest nuclear power in the world at the time that the Soviet Union was basically turning into Russia. Jim, I want you to elaborate on this one, if you would.
When at the end of the Cold War, when the Russian Federation took responsibility for the Soviet Union arsenal, there was a massive negotiation and concern from the United States and others, certainly NATO members and the UK, on what the size of the nuclear arsenal that would be in Ukraine. The Ukrainians had, at the time, the third largest nuclear arsenal in the world at the fall of the Soviet Union. So
that's because they got a lot of at the time the area called the Soviet Union. They inherited an awful lot of their nuclear weapons.
Right, because they weren't, well, it was actually, they were developed in Ukraine. The technology was in Ukraine. So as part of the Soviet Union, there was a tremendous amount of the engineering. And of course, it was close to the NATO borders. So there was a lot of weaponry that was stored there, and the ability to reach targets in Western Europe from Ukraine were critical. And, you know, it was fairly stable. What happened was the United States, the United Kingdom, and Russia all came together in a Budapest Agreement, what they call the Budapest Agreement. And the Ukrainians asked the Ukrainians, and all parties signed on this, to give up their nuclear weapons, return them to Russia, Mother Russia proper, in return for security guarantees by Russia, the United States, the UK, to maintain the Ukraine borders.
And that at this moment in time is simply not happening. Just the opposite is happening.
Right. And that's actually since 2014.
Yeah.
When Vladimir Putin, Russia invaded Crimea. And then this continued war along the Eastern Corridor between Russia and the United States, between Russia and Ukraine, has been, you know, fairly devastating, and now the massive invasion from February of last year. Each of these were a direct breach of the agreement by the Russian Federation to protect the sanctity of the Ukrainian borders.
Agreement
after that, and you know, there's argument about the Minsk agreement following the 2014-2015 negotiations to stop the Russian aggression in Ukraine and along the border. That's irrelevant when the Russians broke that initial agreement, the Budapest Agreement, from back in from the end of the former Soviet Union.
Yeah. Okay, so that's what the research over the weekend in research consists basically of me answering a lot of your comments. I think I answered every single one, if I'm not mistaken, and then me going back to Jim and verifying what my thoughts are on this whole situation. I find it very interesting that Russia has, you know, Russia basically agreed to protect the Ukraine, to protect the sovereignty of the Ukraine. That was a very important treaty when they got their nuclear arsenal back, and it is simply not happening. I don't think there's anybody that can disagree with me on that one.
Yeah. And I, hey, I did, you know, over the weekend, over the radio show, I think Irish Tony had, and this is for him directly, he had asked me last week about where do I get my information from? And I actually answered it on the radio show this weekend. But I will just reiterate that for him because apparently he commented on the radio show reports. Yeah. I get my information from a listserv that provides about 50 or 60 Russian language media outlets.
Right.
And it's put in, it's called the Johnson Report. It's something that professionals in the Russian area will look at, but it's actually Russian news. It includes some Moscow Times. It comes some English language formats, but it's mostly translated Russian information. I get it from UK Ministry of Defense, from the US, from many sources. Some of the sources that on the on the pro-Russian side, Hindustan Times, it's a very large, massive paper from India, very pro-Russian on it. Al Jazeera does neutral reporting. BBC, definitely pro-Western reporting. Yeah. Those are some of the large news agencies, Al Jazeera, BBC in particular, that report often on this. And then, of course, there's hundreds of websites, and there's a lot of feeds from different people that are actually on the ground in a number of places. So I spend an hour or two looking at that each day. Lots of sources. Almost never look at the mainstream media reporting that we see in the United States. Very rarely, because it is relatively inaccurate. And of course, you know, there's a little bit more information. I'm a professional foreign area officer that looked at that region for most of my career, started learning Russian language in 1985, and then served in various embassies in the region and in the area. So, you know, I have personal relationships with many people I still keep in contact with. So basically a broad sense, a lot of broad operations of information to where I get things from. And so far, you know, I said the Russians weren't going to take it right away. They were not successful with that. They're having a very difficult time not holding ground, in spite of the fact that they are attempting and they will try to form another offensive operation, probably coming sometime in the spring, not before it's too wet, maybe where there's still some ice there. But they still are going to have the logistics problems, and they're having it's very expensive to fight this kind of war. It's a tough problem for them.
You know, one thing I want to talk about, because I don't understand, and I probably would like some comments from you, CFS, you know, out of the box, Tony, on this one. I watched an interview that one of our listeners sent me. It was an interview with a U.S. foreign correspondent who had significant boots on the ground time in Ukraine. And this woman said Ukrainians at this moment in time are also killing each other. Any comment on that, Jim?
Well, okay. So in eastern Ukraine, there is a National Guard force that basically it was a paramilitary force that was set up by the Russian government in order to kind of break away, you know, to set the separatist groups. They're territorial guard forces, kind of which a quasi National Guard force. And yes, they've been fighting since 2014. And those are ethnically Russian connected Ukrainians.
Yeah.
And they've been fighting other Ukrainians since 2014, since the invasion in Crimea.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm looking at some of the comments from the weekend show, and people obviously forget what has been said in the past. No, this war began definitely, as Southern Front said, it began back in 2014. It's a continuation of that. Again, an aggressive act by Russia in order to take territory, protect its own interest, and influence the region and the outcomes. And now they were fearful of more expansion of the West and fearful of the potential impact to their economy and their kleptocracy.
Well, Russia is very fearful of the United States for a number of reasons. Number one, Putin is on record as saying is he does not approve whatsoever of anything that's going on in the U.S. societally. Apparently, he stresses the fact that he's got some real – he stresses by his actions – that he's got some real serious apprehension about the morality of the U.S. And he does not want, and he says, one of the reasons that we are doing what we're doing in the Ukraine is because I want no Western influence in my country, being Russia. And he's feeling that the Ukraine area itself could would become a conduit between the West and its daily actions societally, and Putin does not want to see any Western influence whatsoever in Russia. And I probably, given my stance on that, I would probably agree with that.
Well, so it's not just the U.S., it is the West. It is an expansion of different ideas, protecting, you know, some of these social cultural events that he's frustrated with. And I definitely understand that point. The question is, okay, you have to, first of all, you have to separate, you can't say Russia and Putin as all of Russia being Putin.
Okay.
Putin represents a very small group of people that have a tremendous amount of influence, an oligarchic level of control in Moscow that is dictating this and starting this war. Most Russian people don't understand it. They're supportive, they're patriotic, they're loyal, so they're going to do what they need to do. But anybody that actually speaks out against it publicly is arrested. And that is a law right now in Russia. So there's really little ability to understand what the depth of the Russian people's support is on this, because you'll only hear one side from those sources, or they'll go to jail.
Yeah.
The second factor that you really have to consider is, okay, how dangerous is the West ideology and culture to Russia? It's either you have a culture that's intact and is able to sustain itself. And many cultures around the world say, you know what, I'm not going to accept the transgender ideology. I'm not going to accept a lot of the globalist, you know, nationalism, or globalism, and I'm going to protect nationalism. You can see it in Indonesia. You can see it in India. You can see it in massive groups of people. The Chinese are absolutely not supportive of some of the same social cultural things that the West have. So is that a justifiable reason? No, I think it has more to do, in my view, it has more to do with power and control. It had to do with the fear of that small oligarchy being under pressure from more democratic principles, as Zelensky's election in 2019 threatened not only Moscow with the potential spread of, hey, the way that things have been working in that area, in that region, but it was more importantly spreading towards Lukashenko. And Lukashenko in Belarus was under intense pressure through his own domestic politics. So that's the reason why Putin had to act, in my view, and it is survival for him and for the power and the centers of power that he controls, which are directly related to the economic influences and the corporate power that he has gained through energy supplies and coordinating with, basically with Ukrainian oligarchs as well. So a lot of corruption in the region. The more the West got involved in it, the more dangerous that was to take away the power and potentially undermine their government. And so that's what he's afraid of. That's what he's been afraid of from the beginning. And the way he's done it, he's got bad advisors that have said, go out and you're going to crush these guys, because, in fact, they're not crushing them. And as long as the West keeps flowing arms and training and equipment and political support, he's not going to win it. The problem is, how long will they do that? And of course, then the Ukrainians may be left in the cold again, just like the Afghan government was in 2021 when the Biden administration left them high and dry.
Yeah. There's no question about it. We have done significant damage around the world. I'm on record as saying that, I really believe. But let me bring up one other thing, Jimmy. And I haven't read the news this morning, but what came out of Biden's trip to the border?
A couple of photo ops and probably appealing to his constituency on the left that he was there.
Yeah, I would guess.
I think the biggest thing that came out of the border was the realization that El Paso tried to clean up the disaster that was there to make it look good for the cameras.
Yeah.
And that's embarrassing. I don't think he's gained anything. He certainly did not proposed any legislation. He hasn't done anything to step in to increase the security at the wall. I think it was, in my view, it was a desperate measure after the election to appease a few of his constituents to show he's doing something.
Yeah, I think it's really a shame. So he basically accomplished nothing to stop the travesty of illegals breaking the law. And when the vice president went down, she was initially given the assignment of straightening the U.S. involvement and the U.S. tactics on the southern border. I left it up to her. She went down there and did absolutely nothing. I don't understand why the executive office at this moment in time, 10:20 on Monday, I don't understand why they don't really get the danger of illegal immigration, and they really don't do anything. Jim?
Well, I don't think, I mean, look, the border problem is going to continue. The Democrats do not want to stop the flow.
Yeah.
When you look historically at what has changed governments, it has been the big, not just changed governments, changed the direction of humanity. It's been big demographic movements. You can look back to the Mongol moves towards the West. You can look, Timur, Tamerlane, whatever you want to call him. You can look at the spread of Islam and the Moors all the way up through, southern Europe and Spain.
Yeah.
These are big demographic changes. Then you look at Catholicism spread or Christianity spread throughout the region. This is when world demographics change is really changes the direction of humanity. And it has also directly affected the survival of nations. The Roman Empire with Valentine's death was facing the Goths who started coming across the borders and eventually undermined the entire system.
Right.
There is a concerted effort by the Chinese government with unrestricted warfare to undermine the United States as the world's dominant power.
Yeah.
Every one of these aspects help undermine when you talk about drug and border transfers, across the border, you talk about demographic change with the people, you're undermining legitimacy in the country and the stability of it. You're forcing resources away from it. There are many, many things that are happening that the Chinese government like indirectly support, but also the corporations that argue U.S. Chamber of Commerce argues for more immigration because they want more cheap labor. You got major global corporations. Apple just cut a deal to produce their high-end iPhones in China, taking them away from Taiwan.
Yeah.
So they want to sell to the Chinese, the Russians, and the Iranians off production in China, and then they want to sell production from U.S. production in the new facilities they've done in the Western areas. These corporations are involved in making this happen for the benefit, the financial benefit of their businesses that ultimately support the Chinese expansion around the world. And that's what we're facing right now. And the border is a critical part of it. Democrats have been, bought off to push this agenda, thinking it's going to give them more political power. But what it's doing is just undermining the entire future of the United States as a sovereign nation.
Well, there's no question about that, and when you talk about the situation in the Ukraine, that's just another piece of the puzzle called international politics, and another very unique piece of the puzzle, obviously, is what's going on down on the border. I happen to agree with virtually all of the comments that were made. I wanted to say one other thing. One of you guys out there put in a link to 321 Gold, which is Bob's site. Bob, I think, is 100% right in everything that he wrote in the missive that he published on his own website, 321 Gold. I think if we work together, I really believe that we can make a huge difference. We have a lot of new bloggers on the site, by the way, that I'm very, very happy about. So we're getting a variety of opinions now. Some of those opinions are coming from people who I think heard about us on the radio.
Hopefully. And I think Andy pointed out in one of the you know, one of the guys over the weekend show that got on the blog. He pointed out the seven very positive things that came out of this 4 days worth of and 15 votes to get Kevin McCarthy as Speaker of the House. The conservatives, as you look deeper into it, the House Freedom Caucus actually gained a lot out of this. And I think it may not end up being a more effective government, but it's certainly going to be a more conservative direction. Yeah. And and getting these comments and having people open their mind and look at it. I don't agree with Bob Moriarty on this Nazi issue. I think it's bullshit. Yeah. I'm actually tired of listening to it. The vast majority of people in Ukraine voted for Zelensky to move closer to the West with 73% of the vote. 84 to 85% of the polling shows the Ukrainians want to move towards the West. That is a direct threat to Vladimir Putin.
Yeah, it is.
For a strategic area, and most importantly, to control his Black Sea fleet for access to the Mediterranean, and secondly, for control of resources and power in the region. That's why it's a threat. And anybody else that comes up with these BS ideas of Nazism or, you know, expansion, even the cultural issue, you know, if you're not able to maintain the culture of your people on your own, that's a different problem, and it's not going to be solved by attacking and destroying your neighbor.
Yeah.
And he will never be successful in doing that. So anyway, a lot of different views out there. I appreciate when people do step in, and I think everybody on the blog ought to be looking into the these 7 points Dandy put on the weekend show, and that you can look into the Federalist article, which actually lays it out. The Federalist article is from in McCarthy negotiations, GOP landed on most significant win for conservatives in a decade. It's by Emily Jashinsky, January 9th. And I think it's definitely worth the read. There wasn't another option. No one else. Jim Jordan didn't want to run for the office because it looks like he's going to head up oversight committee or the special committee that's going to review the weaponization of government, a select committee that will be formed to look at the FBI and the DOJ, the CDC, and what they've done to silence conservatives, to silence information on COVID, and then how much involvement the FBI and the DOJ had in politics. Absolutely essential committee. Jim Jordan's going to have to run that thing, and he's going to have to run it to ground, which is why I now understand he didn't want to run for the speakership, because he's going to run this committee. And that looks like they had negotiated and agreed to that early on. As I said before, Al, we're going to forget this whole argument in about a month with the House, with the oversight, or with the speaker vote. And it'll be, will Kevin McCarthy follow through with these commitments? And my guess is at this point, he really has no choice, because the House Freedom Caucus has leverage. If they would, the number one thing that they had him agree to was with a single congressional member, one vote, one motion, they can get a vote to remove the Speaker of the House. What that means is, if Kevin McCarthy does not follow up on his promises to the Freedom Caucus, you will have all the Democrats vote against McCarthy, and you only need 5 or 6 Republicans in the Freedom Caucus to vote against him as well. That pushes him out of the office, and then you'd have another fight for the speakership, but it would be a different person. So, very powerful tool to ensure he stays in line and follows through with these 7 commitments that they opened the door for. I think it's a very, very good move for the House Freedom Caucus people. I would have liked to see someone stronger take that leadership role, but it looks like people are starting to work together. And Kevin McCarthy was very thankful to Donald Trump for putting that thing together and getting the last votes across the line.
Yeah, one thing I want to ask a favor of what I would call our star bloggers. I requested over the weekend, CFS made a very vocal argument for the concept of a lot of Nazis in the Ukraine right now. I asked you, CFS, if you could send me some numbers, because I believe that you're a lot more cognizant of the situation that I'm in, and I don't want to make any mistakes. I would trust the numbers that you would send me. When I ask you to do something like that, we're all friends, we're all working together, we're all a part of this site. Give me some help, CFS, on that one, would you? Anything else, Jim?
Yeah, hey, so I've told everybody about 2 weeks ago that watch out for what's happening in Brazil. Of course, it caught fire this weekend.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, Lula, the new president, has, you know, arrested over 400 people that were protesting. They did break into the Senate chambers and to the palace buildings. We're, you know, it's basically there's a level of frustration there that will not slow down.
Yeah.
And the more they crack down on it, the more likelihood it's going to get a little bit ugly. And of course, the ultimate power player in Brazil is the military. They have been supportive of former Captain Bolsonaro.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens on this, but it's definitely important to watch what's happening, as well as what's happening in China when they continue to rattle sabers over Taiwan and look at the weakness of the United States and the Biden regime right now.
We certainly have many, many subjects we can deal with in these great daily editorials. Got my word. I've said before, I'm going to answer almost every single comment. I walked my walk over the weekend. I tried to answer every single comment. So remember, there are probably 7 times as many of you as there is the one of me. I'm doing the best I can. Jimmy?
Hey, Al, we got it. There's one other thing that I forgot we definitely got to touch on. And today, the Supreme Court denied the Brunson motion.
That was
an attempt to basically force over 300 of the legislators out of office.
Yeah.
I had said before that it was a stretch and a long reach. It managed to get up to be reviewed because of the appeal process. It looks like many of the people that were supporting it were doing it just to grift off people, to take money from them, and get them excited. Unfortunately, I know some of the people on our blog website had hoped that this thing would work out, but there was really never really much of a chance of it. It's really going to come down to the politics, the pressure and the politics. I think there are some cracks right now in the deep state walls. There's weakness. And if we get Joe Biden to run again, I think there's going to be a lot of frustration out there and inability for the Democratic Party to pull it together. And there's maybe a little bit of hope that over time we can gain some more ground.
Yeah, I hope you're right. You guys out there, give me about 20 minutes before you start sending comments. I got to eat breakfast, but within about 20 minutes, I'll be on the comments to the best of my ability.
To find out more about today's guest, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You are listening to KER Politics.